Well, Mother's Day is a wonderful time to get together and to honor and celebrate our moms and all of the wonderful things that they do in our lives. But it's often a day that makes preachers nervous because it's not always easy to come up with a good message. And the main reason is that people have mixed emotions about the holiday. Now, some of you had great moms. Perhaps your mom was kind and nurturing and loving. Maybe she taught you important lessons of life, helped you to believe in yourself, and gave you many good things. But not everyone had that kind of positive experience. Perhaps their moms were critical and overbearing. Some moms leave their children and don't come back. Others abuse their kids or allow others to abuse them. And then there are some who are sad today because they've lost their mothers, or they're a mom who has lost a child. And so, with so many different people in a church with so many different experiences, it's sometimes difficult to come up with a message that doesn't bless one person while inadvertently hurting others. So today, we're going to take a slightly different approach by focusing on one of the worst mothers in the Bible. So you ready? So I want you to listen to this really weird story from 2 Kings chapter 11, verses 1 to 3. And this is what it says. Now when Athaliah, Ahaziah's mother, saw that her son was dead, she set about to destroy the royal family. But Jehosheba, King Joram's daughter, Ahaziah's sister, took Joash, son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the king's children who were about to be killed. She put him and his nurse in a bedroom. Thus she hid him from Athaliah so that he was not killed. He remained with her for 6 years, hidden in the house of the Lord, while Athaliah reigned over the land. Okay, so you got it? I didn't think so. Now, this is a story that when you come across it in the Bible, you oftentimes just give up trying to read it because you can't even pronounce the names. And I might even mispronounce the names as we move through this message this morning, so I ask for your grace. But when you really understand what's going on, it is an incredible story that has lots of important life lessons. And so what I'm going to do is kind of back up and walk you through it, providing some important context. Now, as I do this, you should have received a handout when you came in. If not, you can quickly move to the back and grab one. It's also projected up here. But this handout is going to help you walk through this royal drama, as you will see, and kind of keep the names and their roles straight. So before we get there, it's important to note that this story takes place in the mid-800s BC when Israel was divided into two kingdoms. And so if you can imagine a picture of Israel on the map and you drew a line roughly cutting it in half, there was the northern kingdom, which was called Israel, and then there was the southern kingdom that was called Judah. And the northern kingdom was ruled by King Ahab, who's the first person on your handout, who was married to a Phoenician princess named Jezebel. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to be really honest. How many of you have heard of Ahab? Raise your hand. A few, more than I thought. How many of you have heard the name Jezebel? Raise your hand. There you go. And the reason why is because even if you don't know the story of Jezebel in the Bible, you've heard people say that woman is a Jezebel, and you know that it's not a good thing. And the reason why is that in the Bible, Jezebel was an evil, twisted, ruthless person who earned that reputation. As a Phoenician woman, Jezebel grew up worshiping the ancient Near Eastern god of storms and fertility called Baal. And when she married Ahab, she did not convert to Judaism. In fact, she violently imposed her religion on all of those in the empire. And if anybody got in her way, she would leverage her power as queen and kill them. So we read in the Bible about some of Israel's prophets that were killed under the command of Jezebel. As would be expected, Ahab and Jezebel had children, which is also on your handout, and one of them was a daughter named Athaliah. She ended up marrying a prince in the southern kingdom of Judah named Joram. You with me so far? You might have to refer to your handout. It can get confusing. When Joram's parents died, he became the king of Judah, and Athaliah became the queen of the southern kingdom. Athaliah and Joram had children too, and they had at least one son named Ahaziah and a daughter named Jehosheba. Ahaziah married a woman, and we don't know her name, but he got married and he had children, and we don't know exactly how many children he had, and we don't know all of their names, but we know that he did have a son named Joash. Okay. So when Joram died, his son Ahaziah became king, and he reigned for 1 year until he was killed in battle. And when Athaliah finds out that her son is dead, she sets out to destroy, the Bible says, to destroy the entire royal family. Now, do you see what's going on here? It's absolutely crazy. Under normal circumstances, when Ahaziah died in battle, his oldest son would have become king. But instead of grieving her son's loss and allowing her grandson to ascend the throne, her grandson Joash, she decides to murder all of her grandchildren so that she can rule the southern kingdom by herself. Unfortunately, Athaliah confirmed the old adage, like mother, like daughter. Just like her mom, Jezebel, who killed anyone who stood in her way, trying to spread the worship of Baal, Athaliah was willing to kill her own family in order to consolidate power. Do you see the influence from one generation to the next? It's absolutely stunning. This is the first time that this had ever happened in the history of Israel. And after Athaliah was removed from the throne, it was the last time that it happened as well. All because she was willing to kill her grandchildren. She was empowered to rule as queen for 6 years. Now, part of the good news this morning is that no matter how bad, moms, no matter how bad you feel, no matter how much you feel like you're failing as a mother, at least you're not an Athaliah, who's probably the worst mother in the Bible. Now, if I were to take a different angle and say who is the best mother in the Bible, who comes to mind? Now, for many, it's Mary, the mother of Jesus. And we can deduce from Scripture and tradition that Mary was wise and selfless as she raised Jesus, who would be hailed as the Jewish Messiah. And what's interesting, though, is that there's only one story in the Bible about Jesus' childhood, and it's found in the Gospel of Luke. Many here may remember the story. When Jesus was 12, his family and his friends from the surrounding community made a pilgrimage to Jerusalem for the Feast of Passover. And it was a 9-day walk, right? I mean, they couldn't jump on their bike or get in their Honda Accord. It was a long walk. It was 9 days. And when they got there, it was a time of joyous celebration and religious remembrance. When the festivities were over, the Holy Family and all of their friends got a caravan together and began to make their way back home. And after about a day, they look around and don't see Jesus. I can just imagine Mary saying to Joseph, "Honey, where's Jesus?" And Joseph saying, "I thought he was with you." And panic ensues, and they begin to run around the entire caravan looking for their son and realizing that he was still probably back in Jerusalem. So they turned around and walked all the way back, which took another day, and then spent a third day looking for him throughout the city. And so, in what seems like an episode of Home Alone, Jesus is without his family for 3 days. And can you just imagine how horrible Mary must have felt? Have you ever lost a child, even just for a moment? You don't have to say it out loud, but just think back, be honest. I remember one time being in a department store looking through clothes, and Job used to hide inside the carousels, you know, the carousels of clothes. He would get up and hide, and I noticed that he wasn't right beside me, and I just assumed he was in the carousel, and I said, "Job, come on," and I looked in, and he wasn't there, and my heart almost stopped. I was terrified. And when things like this happen, and the terror kind of fades away, then it's very easy to begin to feel guilty. How in the world could I lose my own kid? Have you felt this way? And one of the main points of this story is that even the best mother in the Bible, even the Theotokos, the one that tradition calls the mother of God, Holy Mary, even she made mistakes and probably at times felt like a bad mom. And you know, we could survey lots of different mothers in the Bible and see that they too had failings with their kids. And the main point here is that there are no perfect mothers. And guess what, guys? There's no perfect fathers either. Every parent blows it from time to time and feels guilty. So while Mother's Day is a wonderful opportunity to celebrate all of the good things that our moms have given to us throughout life, it can also be a great time to focus on forgiveness. You know, sometimes we need to forgive our moms. Sometimes we need to ask our moms to forgive us. And sometimes, moms, you need to forgive yourselves. You know, this might come as a total shock to you, but when I was young, I was kind of a wild child, especially in my teenage years. You heard my wife laugh out loud in the front row. But it was very difficult for me to see how the wild and sometimes bad behavior actually impacted my parents. But as I got older, as I had kids of my own, and as I reflected back over my earlier years, it became more clear to me how much heartbreak and anxiety I had caused my parents. And so there were various times when these episodes would come to mind, and I would go to my parents and say, "You know, Mom, I'm sorry." And what's funny is that sometimes I would confess things that she didn't even know, and she would say, "I wish you hadn't told me that." This was good for my soul, as confession always is. And I think that my parents really appreciated it. I know that they had forgiven me even before I asked, but it was a great way to grow in my relationship with my parents. And I want to ask, what about you? Are there things for which you need to say to your mom or your dad, "I'm sorry"? You know, Mother's Day, we express gratitudes for our mom, but again, it can also be a good time to ask for forgiveness for the things that we've put her through. So just think about that. In addition, it can also be a good time to forgive our mothers for their own shortcomings. Because there are no perfect mothers, we all are hurt by our moms in one way or another, just as we have hurt our mothers in one way or another. And for some, the shortcomings were small, the pain is small, and forgiveness is easy. But for others, the pain is really significant. Perhaps your mom left when you were young and didn't come back. Maybe your mom destroyed your self-esteem by constantly saying nasty and critical things. Maybe your mom abused you or let other people abuse you and didn't step in to intervene. In these cases, forgiveness can be extremely difficult, and for some, it might even seem impossible. And I know people who have to go through years of therapy before they can even get to the point where they can consider forgiving their mother. But Jesus tells us that we must, with God's help, find a way to forgive, because if we don't, the resentment and the pain will continue to increase in our hearts, and it will literally kill us from the inside out. So regardless of where you are on the journey toward forgiveness, I would encourage you to ask yourself the question, what small step can I take today that will at least ensure that I'm moving in the right direction? And if this is a topic that you really struggle with, I would encourage you to go back to the sermon series that I preached on forgiveness several months ago. You can find it on YouTube and iTunes, and it's a 4 or 5 part series that will give you an understanding of forgiveness in the Christian tradition, dispelling many misunderstandings, and give you some concrete steps that you can take to start moving in the right direction. But for now, let's go back to our really weird Bible story. So, Athaliah tries to kill all of her grandchildren so that she can rule as queen over the southern kingdom of Judah. But things did not go as planned because her daughter Jehosheba saved one of the grandkids, Joash. Do you see what's going on here? She actually violates the adage, like mother, like daughter. Remember that Athaliah had confirmed the adage, becoming even more wicked than her mother Jezebel. But Jehosheba doesn't become like Athaliah. And you know what? This story helps us to see that we don't have to be like our mother either. Now, if you had a good mom, and I hope that you did, there might be many parts of her life that you want to emulate. But if not, this story helps us to see that you can break the family cycle and become a better person. In our story, Jehosheba saves and protects her nephew, Joash, and risks her life doing so because we know that if Athaliah is ruthless enough to kill all of her own grandchildren, that she would just as easily kill her daughter if she tried to thwart her plan. As far as we know, Jehosheba didn't have any children of her own. Perhaps she couldn't have kids. Perhaps she had a child and lost him or her. We don't know. But what we do know is that she risked everything, including her own life, for 6 years to protect and raise Joash until he was 7 years old and he was brought out of hiding and into the temple and crowned as king. But even after he was crowned king, he was still being raised by his aunt and uncle. And I'm wondering if God has ever put Jehosheba in your life. Maybe your mother and father abandoned or failed you in some serious way, and God sent an aunt or an uncle, a grandma or a grandpa, a friend, a coach, a teacher, a camp counselor, a youth leader, a college professor, someone to care for you, to nurture you and guide you. This is one way that God cares for us, by sending us a Jehosheba when we need one the most. But perhaps even more important, God helps us to become like Jesus by calling us to be a Jehosheba for someone else. For a child, for a youth, for a young adult that is struggling. Is there a child in your orbit that needs your love and care and guidance? I just want you to think about that this morning. You know, I met a Jehosheba recently when working with a nonprofit that I run with my buddy Dan. And we were, it's called Surfers Helping Kids, you might have heard of it. We got a board from a company called Share the Stoke, who gets boards donated from Firewire. If you're not a surfer, that probably doesn't mean anything, but Firewire's are pretty cool boards, just saying. And we had this extra board, and we were charged with the responsibility of finding someone local to give this board to who was a child or a youth in need and who was deserving. And we were made aware of a local girl who attends Cocoa Beach High School. She lost her father, and her mother was incapable of providing adequate care because she was addicted to drugs and still active in her addiction. So she moved in with her grandparents, only to lose her grandfather shortly thereafter. And so her grandmother became her Jehosheba. And I had the honor of meeting this incredible woman when we met on the beach to give her granddaughter the surfboard. And I genuinely felt a sense of honor being in this woman's presence, who was quite elderly and even a little frail, who was raising her granddaughter and the siblings by herself. and I just couldn't leave without giving her a big hug. I also met her surf coach and mentor, who God had put in her life as a Jehoshaphat, who was pouring into her and nurturing her in the absence of her parents. And you know, we have a lot of Jehoshaphats in our own congregation, and one of them you may know, Gloria Vaughn, is an example of this. But I just want to ask, what about you? What about you? Is there a Joash in your life that needs you to be a Jehoshaphat? So as we look at the end of our story this morning, we see that Joash goes on to reign as one of Judah's great kings. And you know, he could have grown up to be ruthless like his grandmother, Athaliah. He could have grown up angry with God, angry that his dad was killed in battle, angry that all of his brothers and sisters were murdered by their grandmother. He could have grown up to be a tyrannical king, but he didn't. If you read the story, he followed in the footsteps, not of Athaliah, but of Jehoshaphat. And the Bible says that Joash did all that was right in the sight of the Lord all of his days. He was a blessing to others when he could have easily become a curse. And this part of the story helps us to realize that no matter what life we've inherited, no matter how bad the parenting was of us, no matter how we were lacking in our childhood, that even I can rise above our circumstances and be a man or a woman who is loving and kind, someone who makes the world a better place. So in this message, you've learned about the Bible's worst mother, about the Bible's best mother. You've learned the importance of forgiving and being thankful for all the Jehoshaphats that God has placed in your life, and you've learned the importance of being willing to be a Jehoshaphat in the life of someone else. And so as we conclude our service this morning, I just want you to begin to ask yourself the question, which of these lessons, the many rich lessons that come out of this family drama, which of these lessons is resonating in your heart this morning? And how can you focus on that lesson and enter into a time of prayer and ask God, how can I take the next step in applying that lesson to my life? And my prayer is that God will bless and strengthen you as you continue moving forward to become the person that God has created you to be. To be a mirror image of the compassion and love of God in this world as we see perfectly embodied in Jesus of Nazareth. I'm going to invite you to stand at this time and join me in our final song. This is one of my favorites, Revelation song. And again, we want you to respond to God in any way that is most natural for you. If you want to come forward and pray and you want to be by yourself, if you'll just come to this side of the chancel railing, if you want to come forward and have someone come and pray with you, you can come to this side of the chancel railing. You can remain seated and pray if you would like. You can stand. You can raise your hands. Just do whatever you need to do to respond to God this morning so that this message will fall on the fertile ground of your heart and take root and grow to bear much fruit.